Mark, guys. Here we are again to break down yet another amazing fight weekend. We had two great events that you and I both covered, Waleed. We had Bellator 243, which I was involved in the post-fight press conference. And then we had the UFC fights this weekend. Great fights all around. Let's talk about the Bellator 243 card here for a second. Michael Chandler, man, nothing ceases to amaze me when it comes to this guy. You knew that he was such a great wrestler. He goes and does what no man has ever done before and knocks out Benson Henderson with a nasty combination. And in the first fight, he hit Benson with some big shots. So yeah. I knew that he had that power there with, and I knew that it was going to, eventually find this target. I did not expect it to be in the first round. I don't expect it to be as clean as it was. Michael Chandler looked amazing.
Yeah, listen, Michael Chandler is the complete package. I feel like he can do everything. He can strike, he can grapple, he can wrestle. He can do everything.
Our boy Tim Johnson, huge win against Matt Mitrione. Just a great, great main card. Let's start off in the very beginning to fight. Dalton Rasta put a nasty cut on Mark Gardner, and that ended up freaking completely closing the fight. Dalton advances to 3-0. It was a clean elbow that landed on Gardner's head and split him wide open.
Do you think that it should be a strategy, like, to try to open a fighter, like, when you see that one elbow like pass and you open him like a little bit, you should just be jabbing it to make it bigger? Yeah, do you think that should be a strategy?
I've seen fighters do that. I've seen, Jan, she fights in the strawweight division. She fought Karolina Kolkiewicz. It was probably like last year. And she opened up Kolkiewicz right above her eye. And she was just throwing rights all at that eye the entire time. And he eventually, the doctor didn't stop it, but the cut was so bad, the blood was pouring in Carolina's eyes. She ended up getting the stoppage because of it.
Yeah, because those elbows, man, to the eyebrows, like, come on. Like, the cut is, like, it happens, like, right there, and,
Yeah. Especially, like, if you look at guys like the Diaz brothers, they bleed easily, and they bleed in almost every single one of their fights in that same position. Exactly. It's almost dumb not to go after it. Yeah. Charlie Campbell showed that you could go in there and just throw a bunch of leg kicks and win a fight, no problem. He hit Dung with some of the nastiest leg kicks I've seen. Charlie Campbell moving up to 2-1. It took two rounds for him to figure it out, but once the second round came out and he just started throwing those leg kicks at will, he hurt Dung with some big kicks. One just drops him completely. He tries to get up and put a little pressure on it. Campbell did the smart thing, something that I wish more fighters would do. Andre Sukumtaw should have done it to Sean O'Malley. He made Dung stand back up. We're not going to enter a grappling match when I've got your leg hurt. You're going to stand back up and strike with me. And because of, being on one leg, one more huge leg kick by Charlie Campbell, it was all she wrote for Mr. Dung.
Yeah, that leg kicks are really a game changer. And, it really changed how you fight. This is, I think, Justin Gaethje's way to approach his fight against Khabib. I think that that's what he said, that he would start with some heavy leg kicks. Leg kicks really make you uncomfortable and doesn't really allow you to think what to do, because you start thinking that I need to check those kicks. And when you start checking them, he starts attacking the face. Of course, it's also dangerous when you kick someone in the leg. You can break your own leg, but it's really, really...
We've seen it happen.
Yeah, we've seen it happen many times. So,
crazy, crazy fight. Jeff Neal's younger brother, Grant Neal, I don't know if they're really brothers. I'm just throwing that one out there. He beat his opponent, Hamza Salam. Salam was a very decorated wrestler, and Neal was able to just control the entire grappling exchanges. It really showed that he's a dominant force in 205. He's 4-0 in Bellator. So, he could just keep moving up those rankings. Eventually, he could be in that 205-pound title picture. We're talking, maybe four or five fights down the road, but he has the skill set to do that. I think he needs to go back, work on his cardio a little bit. But every fighter, even with a really dominant performance, can tell you something they need to work on in the next fight. Cardio is something that I think personally Neal needs to work on, especially with the pace that he likes to set and how he likes to dictate the pace. I think that's something that if he had a solid cardio, that dude's going to be hard to stop.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with you. I feel like maybe give him like two or three fights and he can be on that title picture. So who knows? Maybe, I don't know. Listen, what I think is in Bellator, one or two big wins and you can be fighting for the title.
The only problem with that 205-pound division is they have a brand new shiny addition in Corey Anderson. So yeah. Why I put it so far back to four or five fights is I feel like Bader has opponents right now. There's multiple options, even especially if you look at guys like Lyoto Machida, former UFC light heavyweight champion, could easily be. I think if they did a Bellator light heavyweight Grand Prix, I think unfortunately with the names that you could move from obviously, you know, light heavyweight, middleweight, and heavyweight, even there's some small heavyweights that can make heavyweight. I think those things that you can move around will push Grant Neal out of the discussion of a Grand Prix unless it happens in about a year or two. But I definitely think he's someone who could make some noise if he was in a situation like a Grand Prix.
Yeah, I agree with you, but we will see.
Now, Valerie Laredo finished her fight with 5 fucking seconds left in the very first or very second round. Terragraph, they went at it before the fight on the internet. It was a very emotional win for Valerie. I talked to her during the post-fight press conference, and she was very emotional. You could tell, even when she was talking about it, like there was parts of her that she just wanted to tear up, and she was so excited and happy that she got that win. And you can tell that once she hurt Tara, she just put it on her, and there was no stopping Valerie at the end. I think the only thing that would have saved Tara would have been the bell, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, that was I feel like it was maybe my favorite fight in this card because, I don't know, because the fact that it was personal, Valerie hitting that dance after she won by knockout, and what happened, like you said, during the post-fight press conference, really, like, for me, took this fight to a whole nother level. I like when sometimes there's a rivalry in a fight. We all love that, when a fight really means more. Sure. So, yeah, so it was a great fight. And Valerie, dude, she is a tough fighter.
She's a needle mover as well. Let me say something. Valerie had more questions than anybody in the post-fight press conference outside of Michael Chandler.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Huge. We're talking about everybody in the main card. I mean, there's some big Bellator names in this main card. Adam Boris, Sabar Hamasi, Tim Johnson. Your boy AJ made an appearance. We'll talk about that.
I'm going to talk about that. Yes.
But Valerie Laredo moves a needle. She is 3-0. She could really one day challenge Illuminae McFarley for the 125-pound title. This is another situation with Grant Neal. She's about 5-6 fights away. If she doesn't lose, she has to stay undefeated to get that shot because of the women who are in the 125-pound division in Bellator right now and who could potentially be there soon. There's a lot of contracts moving in and out with the UFC right now. You don't know how this Paige VanZant bare knuckle thing's gonna last. I mean, let's be realistic. She might not fight that whole contract of bare knuckle. Beck Rollins didn't, so we really don't know how that's gonna play out. 125-pound division in Bellator is, you know, quietly stacked, and the more women that the UFC sees as unuseful, they'll just keep utilizing over here in Bellator.
For one thing is sure is that Valerie, I feel like her and Cyborg are the, and maybe Cyborg more, but she will become also the face of the females division in Bellator. I really feel she's a star in the making. That's what I think.
Illumile, I feel like, is definitely up there, though. You can't disrespect her. She is constantly on the broadcast team. She's constantly doing, you know, post-fight, pre-fight stuff. I've seen her at every single Bellator in Los Angeles. She's never fought at one of them, but she's always busy. She's always running around. She's always doing things. They definitely have big plans for that young lady.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, not the last fight of the prelims, probably the most entertaining fight of the prelims, especially what happened afterwards. Chris Lanzani advances to 7-2 as he beats your boy AJ Agassi with a unanimous decision. AJ even headbutts Chris in the second round. Oh, what do you think about that? AJ said it wasn't a headbutt. Did you think it was a headbutt? You're an AJ fan.
I think it was so personal for him, and he was so out of like his mind during that fight that it was a headbutt, but he didn't think that it was a headbutt, you know?
He headbutted the shit out of Chris, bro.
Yeah. Dude, even after the fight, when you told me about the press conference, we're going to talk about that in a minute, but even his Instagram posts, like he's saying that, yeah, you had one lucky elbow or some shit. I feel like he's not taking this loss like very good like he did for his first one, but it's because it's so personal. I don't think that he's a sore loser. It's just that because of the rivalry, that's what I think.
Dude, I had a ton of respect for AJ Agassi. I've spoken to him both times I've been at the last two Bellator events in LA. And, you know, he's always been very cordial with me. He's always, you know, opened my questions. And we've never had the time or opportunity to get an interview down, but we've always talked about it. And I honestly lost a ton of respect for him, just the way he handled the situation. I mean, that there was probably one of the most unprofessional situations I've ever seen.
Maybe.
When we deal with these post-fight press conferences for Bellator, we've never talked to any of the losers ever. AJ Agassi demanded to talk to the media. They cut him off after like three questions. The internet didn't ask any questions. The couple people that were there were asked questions, and they cut him off. It was a strange situation. He went in there and he blamed the fact that there was a judge that was there that shouldn't have been there, because he has relations with AJ and Chris. And if that was the situation, how come you knew who these judges were at the beginning of the night? You've been in the building all night. Why didn't you say something to Scott Coker or somebody ahead of time before? You're the fifth fight of the night, bro. You're gonna cry about it after you lose?
He's lost new to this game. He's new to this game. I feel like he's new to this game. It was like childish, maybe, his reaction. But in the other hand, it was a natural reaction. I feel like if you take anybody outside and you give him a fight against like his so-called rival and he loses by unanimous decision, I feel like you will find weight and say like, yeah, I didn't lose. Listen, the Diaz brothers always do that. They never lost. If you listen to Nick Diaz, and they never lost. They never lost a fucking fight. True or false? There's always true. Nick never lost to Carlos Condit, and Nate never lost to Conor.
I agree with you.
But for all the fights, and he didn't lose to GSP. Also, you know, they never lost a fight. It's a way of thinking. Maybe AJ, the approach looked like he was a sore loser, but it's still entertaining. Okay, it's still entertaining. It's still show. He will become the big villain. Who cares? He's a good fighter. He needs to work on some stuff, but he will be back.
You really love AJ Agassi, don't you?
I really like the fighter. I will not shit on him. Bro. I really like the guy. I really like the guy.
In the main event of the prelims, Adam Borish defeated Mike Hamill in a very close fight. It was a split decision victory for Borish. He moves up to 15-1. His one loss is to Darian Caldwell. Beautiful performance by Adam. He needed that bounce back victory. I would love to see him against Campos next. I asked him who he would like. That's exactly what he told me was Derek Campos. I was in the middle of like having to run and go get my son. And I, for some reason, it said that I raised my hand on the computer. So I got back from getting him and they're like, hey, Randall, ask him a question. I'm like, oh fuck. I didn't hear any of the questions before. So I just kind of went with it.
Yeah.
Asked him what was on top of my head. I was like, so who do you want to fight? And are you healthy?
That shit happens, I feel like.
Shit happens sometimes.
But it was a very, very close fight, I feel like. Do you agree with the decision?
I could have seen them giving it to Hamill, honestly. I could have seen it go on either way. I thought, you know, it wasn't a robbery by any sense by them giving it to Adam. But it was definitely a very close split decision victory for either gentleman.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like I'm not like upset with the decision, but it would have even go either way, but yeah, it is what it is.
Now, here was a one-sided decision that I did not think was going to happen like this. Yeah. Sabahu Mazi defeated Curtis Millender with a beautiful grappling presence. He was able to stand and trade with the thicker Millender, and I think that was something that Sabahu was able to put in his repertoire and save for later. Sabahu is a definite threat to that 170-pound division. He, you know, has beaten big names in the UFC. We could see him, you know, continue to rise. Curtis Millender was brought in from the UFC to eventually fight for a title at 170. Well, Sabahu Mazi just took all of that hype.
Do you think that Curtis maybe lost this fight because of his lack of wrestling experience, grappling experience, or maybe cardio? What do you think was the reason for his loss?
Honestly, I think he was overlooking Sabahu Mazi.
Okay.
I truly feel like he thought that he was going to walk through Hormozi, and I think that in his opinion that it was going to be a quick first round knockout.
I agree with you, and I think that he's not the
That's
only
just
one.
The way his
everybody...
body language just came out, you know what I mean? He fell completely flat after that first round, which made it me think that he was going in there for a first round finish.
That's what I think. That's what I'm asking you, if it was a cardio issue, because he didn't, like, ever, the more the fight goes, the more I think that he didn't look good or well. I'm not sure if it was in his head or cardio, but Sabah really, like,
I don't know if it was just Sabah being able to neutralize everything that Curtis was able to put out there, but it did not seem like the Curtis Millender we've seen in the past.
And I don't want to take anything from Sabah, because that performance was...
It's beautiful.
It was very good. Yeah, it was beautiful. So I would say, you know what? Because sometimes people goes with when you support the loser of a fight, you say, yeah, maybe the reason. You know what? Sabah performed, had the perfect game plan. That's what
exactly.
I think.
And that's, you know, sometimes styles make matchups, and Sabahu Mazi was able to exploit what Curtis Millender doesn't have.
Exactly. Now, he had the perfect game plan.
This one, I want to talk to you about the judge's decision on this one. I completely agree with the fact that Miles Jury beat Georgia Kirikunia, but the fact that it was a split decision and not a unanimous decision for Miles Jury, in my opinion, is a travesty. Now you're going to say, hey, he won the fight. Shut the fuck up.
Okay? You know, you already have my answer, okay?
I get it, all right? But still, there, what fucking judge was watching that gave the fight to Kirikunia? I'm sorry, Georgie did not win a round in that fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. For me, it's a clear, unanimous decision, but at least he got the win. He didn't got robbed. So, you know what? Okay, just turn the page and that's it. No, when people watch, you know, when you go to Wikipedia, when you see the MMA record of someone and you see decision, you don't give a fuck if it's a split or unanimous or whatever. You don't give a fuck. Come on. At the moment, you care. But at the end of the day, when we see this fight, like three years afterward or some shit like that, he won by decision, and that's all that matter.
Like, Kamaru, dominant, unanimous decisions across the board.
Yeah. That would be weird. That would be weird if a Kamaru, like, against Masvidal was a split decision or whatever. That would be a fucking more weird than this, but it is what it is.
Horrible judging. That's what I'm telling. I'm just glad the co-main and the main event just decided to keep the judging out of it. And they decided to keep the night short for us. Tim Johnson goes in there in the first round and knocks out Matt Mitrione in the co-main event, climbing to 14-6. The big man, as we talked to him last Saturday, talked to us about, you know, possibly wanting to get that Czech Congo rematch back.
Yeah, listen, I think that when we previewed this card, we talked about Matt Mitrione becoming much older and that, you know, he's not on his prime. Well, Timothy Johnson is still, he's still out there, you know, and I feel like
he's heavyweight young.
Yeah, that's what we saw, I feel like. Matt Mitrione been in the game like for so long, and he had some wars, you know. Also, Timothy Johnson had some wars, but I feel like Matt Mitrione, like, his chin got more exposed. That's what I think. And you can even see it by the MMA record. But, dude, first round, TKO, you can ask for more, I feel like, from Timothy Johnson.
You can't ask for a better performance. I mean, Timothy Johnson went in there, and he beat one of the best Bellator heavyweights that they have to offer at this moment.
What's next for him, you think?
That Czech Congo rematch honestly looks really appealing to me. I think that which makes the most sense to me, get that one back, and then he's right there in the shortlist for a heavyweight title shot.
I agree with you. Yeah. I would like to see that rematch with Congo. Yeah. It would be fun.
For sure. And then he said maybe Minotov for the title.
Interesting.
So two rematches for him and get them both back, get the belt.
Yeah, that would be good.
Now, in the main event, Michael Chandler showed why he is one of the best lightweight fighters to never step foot in the octagon, even though that might change here very soon. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. But let's talk about the fight, man. He went in there and just showed an amazing amount of pressure, and he was able to connect with some huge shots on Benson Henderson, and he put him out relatively quickly.
Yeah, he is one of the best lightweights, period, I feel like. We don't need to point the fact that he never went to the UFC, because he's fighting like true competition in this division. The lightweight division is stacked in every fucking company you go to. One championship, Bellator, your backyard, who gives a fuck? The lightweight division is always stacked. And dude, he's really showing that he's a complete package. He is like a fucking little GSP or whatever. He can grapple, he can knock you down, he can do everything. I'm really impressed. The more I watch him, the more I'm impressed by him. And he's not slowing down.
Yeah, no, I'm super impressed on what he's able to do and bring to the table. My opinion, I really think that this was his last fight on his Bellator contract. I think that he goes to the UFC. I truly believe that unless Bellator backs up the Brinks truck and brings him a fucking truckload of cash, I think we see Michael Chandler in the UFC finally.
If I'm Bellator, I give him a fucking huge contract with huge money and give him all those pay-per-view big fights. If I'm Bellator, I don't let him go. I will do everything in my power to keep him because he's a star. If I was there.
Yeah, he's no doubt a star, and the star has just continued to rise, and he really put a lot into his... I mean, no one has ever finished Benson Henderson, ever, and he put him away clean. I mean, he's been finished, but he's never been knocked out. He's never been TKO'd. He's never been finished like Michael Chandler finished him.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. We saw... we have the funk. Ben Askren. We have Ben Askren who came to the UFC. Let's be clear. Past his prime. He was past his prime. He didn't look very good even in his first fight against Robbie Lawler, and then we saw what happened with Maya and Masvidal.
Plus, he already had a bad hip at that point.
Exactly. Do you think that at 34 year old, it's the best move for Michael Chandler to move to the UFC or stay in Bellator, or maybe not face the same type of competition, but not lose that level of being relevant in that, you know, the name. You keep like the name and you keep the MMA record. What do you think?
If you're trying to pad your record, we're just going to say it like that. I would stay in Bellator. Realistically, his toughest opponent is Pitbull, Patricio Pitbull.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I don't see a whole lot of competition. If you're looking to prove to everybody that your legacy is what it is and that you are one of the best lightweights, period, I think you make the jump. I would love to see him versus Dustin Poirier right out the gate.
Also. There's so many dream matchup for me if Chandler goes to the UFC. But let's talk about a business point. If I'm Bellator, I will not fucking let him go. I will give him all the money because, listen, if I'm Bellator, I'm tired of seeing my bigger stars moving to the UFC. If I want to compete, I need to find a way to keep them. And, you know, who gives a fuck about the question mark if what if he went to the UFC? Fuck that. Fedor didn't went to the UFC. Why the fuck Michael Chandler have to go? I will give that argument to him. I will give him all the money he needs. I will promote the shit out of him and keep him and make him like the poster guy for Bellator.
I mean, I think it's exactly what you do with him. He is the biggest face of that company right now. And even if he left, I still think he would be the biggest face. I don't think there's guys coming up, but they're not quite there yet. And yeah. I really think if they lost Chandler, it would hurt their brand.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that Michael Chandler, for me, if he goes to the UFC, God forbid, no injury, he's out there with the fucking 10 best fighter in the lightweight division, and maybe even the 5 best fighter in the lightweight division. So for me, it's not even a question, but let's see it in a business side, the business side of it. Let's see if it makes sense. And for Bellator, it doesn't make any sense to see him go.
If Michael Chandler jumps to UFC right now, is he a top 5 UFC lightweight?
Maybe not 5, you know, because I think maybe...
Justin, Tony, Connor, Dustin.
Yeah. I don't know.
Chandler's got to be right there. He's got to be. If he's not top 5, he's 6 for sure.
He's 6 or 7. I agree with you. But it put a lot of pressure. I would rather see him maybe in a first fight against not Dustin, maybe, you know, another fighter who's maybe lowest ranked, you know. Maybe have Dustin for a second fight.
That's what I feel like. I think to get Michael Chandler, it's going to cost him.
It's going to cost him. I agree with you.
So I don't think there's even opportunities for him to fight somebody like a Drew Dober or a Paul Felder or something like that. You know what I mean?
One fight, the first one.
So right
here, he doesn't want that. If he goes to the UFC, he will ask for a big fight like from the stars. So
I think if he jumps right now, he's number 5. You put him above Hooker and right above McGregor.
Yeah, can see that.
And he said he would knock out Connor. He'd knock him out. So I mean, there's interesting matchups.
They all say interesting matchups
if he stays in Bellator. There's interesting matchups if he wants to go to ONE and rematch Eddie Alvarez. There's interesting matchups everywhere for him. I just can't wait to see him get back into a cage. Anything else on Bellator 243?
For this card, there's a personal shout-out I want to give. I want to give a personal shout-out to one of the greatest referee in MMA, in Mike Beltran, for taking the hand of AJ and trying to force him like he was his kid to shake the other guy's hand. That was funny as fuck for me. No, you come and you shake his hand. Like, it was amazing for me. I really enjoyed watching that scene. He is a great referee.
No, Beltran's great, man, especially with all the mistakes that Herb Dean's been making lately. It makes guys like Beltran shine.
He's stepping up. He's really stepping up in that referee ranking, if there's one.
Hell yeah. Well, that about wraps it up for Bellator 243. Can't wait for the next Bellator card here in 2 weeks. We have Nemkov versus Bader. Julia Budd is in the co-main event. Can't wait for that, man. Until then, guys, we'll see you guys later.
Peace.